Wherever you are on your leadership voyage, it starts here.
Welcome to Leadership Voyage, the podcast dedicated to your pursuit of becoming a great leader. My name is Jason Wick, and thank you so much for joining me today for the season finale, season one, episode 15, the end of one full season of Leadership Voyage. Thank you all for joining me on this journey, and I hope you've learned as much as I have from doing this first season of the podcast. You can continue to help support the show by rating and subscribing, leaving a review wherever you are listening or subscribing to this podcast. So whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or elsewhere, please take a minute, go on over, rate the podcast. Whatever you want to rate it is great. Add a review, subscribe to it, and that helps out the show a lot. Before we move forward with this season finale, I want to make sure to take a second to talk about Instacart. During the pandemic, Instacart is something that I started using personally for grocery delivery. The people you work with are friendly. The service is reliable. Multiple stores available. You can shop from all of your favorite grocery stores in a single order, and it's got all the products you love from your local stores, hand-selected by shoppers based on your preferences. You can get delivery to your door in as fast as 1 hour. So check it out. Click the link in the show notes to go to Instacart and show them that we sent you, and it helps support this show. So today, and it's a new topic, wellness, with Lisa Burbage of Wellness 5. And I think this is an exciting episode because it's something uncharted as far as the topics that we've discussed for the most part on Leadership Voyage. Talking about wellness for employees, organizations, the effect that has on people and the bottom line of all of our companies and our teams. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy this discussion with Lisa. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in for another episode of Leadership Voyage. I have the fortune of being here with Lisa Burbage, the CEO and founder of Wellness 5 today. Nice to spend some time with you, Lisa.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jason.
Yeah, you bet. So you have a company, Wellness 5, and it's dedicated to helping companies with the mental and physical stamina of their workforces and other things, I'm sure. As we talk about this very important topic of workplace wellness, I was hoping you could set the stage for us a little bit personally by telling us maybe what inspired you to get into this work in the first place.
Sure. Well, it started with a health scare that I got a diagnosis and it set me back because I was very young when I got it. I wasn't, I was in my 40s. I think that's young. And the doctors were shocked. I was shocked. Everybody was shocked because I had always exercised, but I was overweight. I wasn't obese, but I was overweight. I did exercise, but I didn't eat right, and I didn't manage my stress. And I think a combination of those things is what put me into, I don't mind telling you, I got cancer. Okay. And so once I got myself well, and that was a journey in and of itself, which I won't bore anybody with, but if you've had any chronic diagnosis, any serious health concern, you know that it takes you back. And so once I realized, okay, I could do something about this, it wasn't stage four, it was stage two, I could turn this trajectory around. I got real serious about eating better, learning how to manage my stress, sleeping better, all the things that I talk about now in my programs, I started putting into action for myself. I lost 25 pounds. I mean, I really did a lot of things, learned how to have a better relationship with myself, a better relationship with food. I used to say, this is bad, this is good. No, there's no bad, good foods. There's better foods. Yeah. And then the career that I had for many years, it became a money-making machine, and that's all it was. And I lost my passion for it. I realized I really wanted to help people avoid what I went through, and I wanted to help them on a deeper level than that profession allowed me to do. And so I went back to school, health coaching certificate from Duke University, and then that prepared me to sit for my national boards. So I'm a national board certified health and wellness coach, which is the same board of examiners that give doctors their boards. Okay. So it was a very, very difficult exam, not one I want to repeat. So I keep my continuing ed hours up so I don't have to repeat. I remember telling the bailiff that was sitting outside the testing center, I said, I'm a wet noodle. You're going to have to carry me to my car. I was so, this profession is always changing, and I'm a lifelong learner. So it really love it, what I'm doing now. I'm helping people in a way I never thought possible.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate you sharing some of your personal elements of kind of what kickstarted your metamorphosis, maybe as you said, and some of the journey that you've taken to get where you are, where your whole mission is to help people, as you said, help avoid what you've gone through. I did want to, what I really like to do when we have some of these discussions on the show is try to get a little clear on terminology. And I have a couple of questions for you to help us get level set in the discussion. So First would be, how would you, based on your experience of working with others and your own life, how would you define health or healthy?
You know, before the pandemic, I would have said it's eating better and moving more. Physical health, what people think of as physical health. Since the pandemic and so many things have come out as a result of that, I think mental and emotional health are every bit as important, and they one overlaps the other. If you're anxious and you're stressed or you're depressed, you're not going to want to go out and exercise. You're not going to necessarily want to eat better, even though on some level, you know, you should, but you just don't have the wherewithal to go and do it. So I think holistic wellness, holistic health is what I'm a proponent of now in my programs, in my workshops, and when I speak. They're all revolving around all aspects of health.
Holistic. Okay, thank you. And I am curious, you know, in your introduction, you talked a little bit about exercising when you were in your 40s already and being a little bit overweight and things like that. But then you went and you hit a word, stress. And I am wondering if you had, you know, a few things to say about stress, maybe stress in America. What is the effect stress has? How aware are we of our stress levels? You know, what do you have to say about stress? I'm curious.
I'm a type A. That's just my personality, and that I can't change. But before, I didn't know how to manage it. I didn't set boundaries. I was in sales. So as soon as I hit a sales goal, instead of saying, "Hey, Lisa, great job. Go have a massage, go get your nails done, you know, go do something fun." I was on to the next thing. It was just like I was on a hamster wheel and I was just going and going and going. And that's not healthy. You can, there's different types of stress, and there's, you know, chronic stress, and there's the stress that you get when you almost hit somebody, you almost rear in somebody and you're like, oh my gosh, but then you don't. So you calm down. Yeah. But the stress that most of us have today is chronic stress. Our cortisol is always running high, and that is what, you know, creates inflammation in your body. And inflammation is the driver of all these chronic diseases that you're hearing so much about. Cancer, yeah, that's one. But there's rheumatoid arthritis. There's other autoimmune diseases like MS, gout, just even regular arthritis, type 2 diabetes, heart disease. I ran into somebody the other day at Costco, someone I hadn't seen for a long, long time, and she had a stroke in her 50s, her early 50s. She had a stroke. I mean, it's not about getting thin to be body beautiful. It's about losing weight to be healthy. It's about moving more to be healthy. We're not trying to run marathons here. That's not necessary. But it's just trying to be aware of our choices and then making better ones. And stress is one that you can learn to manage. That's I can go down a lot of rabbit holes. So let me stay on the rabbit hole that we're in. Stress is one that you can manage by setting boundaries. Meditation now, a lot of people are doing meditation. It doesn't mean you have to sit in a lotus position and zone out for an hour like a Buddhist monk, but you could take 10 minutes to do heavy breathing and just kind of tune out. Or when you're at a stoplight, you can just take some deep breaths then. They call that informal meditation. So meditation, formal or informal, is a way to manage stress. Just learning to say no.
That one sounds easy.
It is not, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, thank you for sharing some of those tips already, speaking to the high levels of cortisol, stress, inflammation being at the core of a lot of the challenges that we're facing. Thank you for kind of outlining some of that. Now, we've set a decent stage here, just kind of talking about some of the maybe unhealthy things that we face in our lives. And when we come to your company, Wellness 5, and the work and the mission that you all have, you know, maybe there's a little overlap here in what we've already talked about, but either way, I'm curious, you know, when you work with clients and their workforces, what are some of the most common wellness problems that you tend to see?
Well, again, I guess we'll be saying this for quite some time before the pandemic and after the pandemic, but stress and anxiety were there before the pandemic. It just, you know, it's on steroids now with people being anxious at work, they're, you know, the stress level. They're tired. You know, we've been going full throttle for, working at home had a lot of advantages, but it also blurred the boundaries I was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, I see now people are tired. Okay. We've been working from home now for, almost 3 years, 2.5 years, and we're tired and we don't have an in us anymore. So I hear a lot of senior leadership people tell me that there's no productivity's down. And my response is, well, they're tired, they're stressed, they're anxious. You can't keep expecting them to keep, producing when you're not addressing their wellness needs.
And so you're kind of already explaining it, I guess, here, where how wellness problems are the early or the core, the root cause issues. And we're seeing as leaders of teams or people who run businesses, the effect is on the productivity we see maybe, or the bottom line, however you want to visualize and talk about this. Do you have some examples or even kind of more abstract examples of when you've seen transformations working with others and what that starts to look like in terms of health and thus employee productivity down the line?
Yeah, when people feel better, they want to do better. You know, I mean, it's whether they feel better mentally or physically or a combination of both. Think about, when you're at your highest, when you're in the flow or the zone or whatever they call it, you're feeling good, you got energy, you got a good night's sleep. I mean, you're just, all cylinders are going. And so that's real and real important, to try to have that. And it's hard to have it, it's hard to focus on everything. So when I run a program, I tell everyone to just focus on one thing that I do an assessment so they can determine what area of health, the five areas of health, which is why I named my company Wellness 5, what area you feel that you are scoring the lowest in. Usually people want to work on that. So it might be you're not getting enough sleep and that's causing you to gain weight. It's causing your blood sugar levels to go up because that's what happens. Your immune system is compromised. So you might get a virus or the flu or whatever else. So sleep is real, real important. It's not just about, you know, being alert, although that's a part of it, but it impacts a lot of other things in your health. And it also lessens your resistance. So you're not as likely, I'm too tired to go exercise. When you're tired, you're not craving an apple, you're craving a donut.
Yeah.
Your resistance is lower, so you're going to go for the donut. So, so one area I usually, you know, say focus on one area and then create some good habits around that one area. And then that gives you the momentum. Okay, well, I got that one down. Now let me go tackle my nutrition. You know, what am I doing around there? Or let me tackle my mental and emotional health. Let me put some priority on that. So anyway, so it all kind of dovetails one into the other.
I mean the relationship between all these things as you're talking is really clicking for me. It seems really, really interesting. I love you said it pretty succinctly. When people feel better, they want to do better. I think that's simple and hard maybe, but yeah, simple to understand. I'm wondering, when you talk about these stressors or these challenges people are facing and they're tired after the pandemic, we're in the world we're in today. I mean, from your perspective, how important is it for employers to get involved in this with their employees? You know, I mean, do you think some people think, oh, that's their personal life, that's their business, or they do see the connection between wellness and productivity? What do you think is the right place for an employer to be involved at this level?
Well, I think the thinking used to be that's an employee's personal life. You know, it doesn't need to get involved in their work life. But let's be real, Jason, we bring our whole self to work.
Yeah, we do.
You know, we don't compartmentalize. And so I think employers are realizing that they're stepping up. They see their healthcare costs going up. That affects their bottom line, like you mentioned earlier. They're not getting the productivity they want. That affects their bottom line. And then output, you know, affects the cost of things. If we don't have, I mean, that's where this is a global thing. If we don't have good output, prices are going to be higher. You know, newspapers talking to, you know, I read three different newspapers and that's what a lot of them are saying, is this productivity problem is going to impact prices and things are going to become more expensive. We already feeling that.
Yeah, we certainly are. Yeah. And so you're thinking, you know, this kind of evolution of the mindset of looking at an employee is, maybe a couple decades ago, we could just very clearly, we just pretend, oh, there's a line here. You have a professional self and a personal self. But as you're pointing out, you're a person, you're a human. I've had other guests. We talked about core values with the previous guests I've had, and they spoke at length about, well, you're still bringing your whole self to your work, right? You are a human. And it seems very simple again to understand it at that level. So there's definitely an interest to care about their employees' wellness. Now, I'm curious, you referred to some of the workshops or assessments and things like that you do with clients and their employees. I'm wondering if you could kind of walk us through maybe a little more detail, how you would start working with a client.
First of all, I meet with the decision maker. The decision maker meaning who controls the pocketbook. That type of decision maker.
Yes.
And we do kind of a needs analysis, you know, what's showing up for them in their workforce, you know, where are they seeing the problems? And then I talk to the employee and find out, you know, what do the employees see as the problems? Mm-hmm. And then we create a program that I already have in place, or we modify it a bit to tailor it to their needs. So the employees have the buy-in because it's addressing their needs, but it's also addressing the needs of the employer. So everybody feels like, okay, you know, how many times have you heard companies running wellness programs and nobody signs up? Because it's really not addressing the employees' needs. It's companies putting it out there. Oh, we're doing the right thing. We're offering wellness. Well, guess what? That's not what the employees want. And all these apps, I mean, there's over 200 wellness apps now. And companies are saying, well, we've got wellness. We've got an app, or we've got an insurance portal.
Yeah.
Well, not really. You know, connection, loneliness. I mean, these are real issues in the workplace today, especially as we work in this continued hybrid or fully remote model. Even people when they come in are lonely. There's that we're human beings, we're wired to connect with others. How well we learned that during the pandemic. And so to tell somebody, well, go log into your portal or go log into your app. I mean, how is that helping their socialization and connection? It's not helping them at all. And so that's where what I really, really like to do and really floats my boat is going in and running a group for a group of employees so they can connect outside of a work project and talk about something other than work, yet they're not having to go to a happy hour to do it.
Right. So you're bringing them together around something that you've already identified that they want to improve in their wellness. You're facilitating that through the connection, and you are the coach in this scenario, right?
Right. I'm the coach, and we do it during work hours. You know, sure. I was telling a decision maker the other day, I said, we don't run these programs at 5:15 and not necessarily on an employee's lunch hour, but maybe around the lunch hour. For one company, I ran it at 3:00 in the afternoon because they had shifts. But in this virtual world, you know, a salesperson could be on a sales call out of town and they could Zoom in. A lot of my programs now are Zoom. It's really easy to connect in a virtual platform, and it's a lot less intimidating. When people are struggling, maybe with their weight in particular, they don't necessarily want to draw a lot of attention to themselves. But on a Zoom platform, all you see is from the neck up. But a Zoom platform is very freeing for a lot of people that are self-conscious, don't feel as good about themselves as they'd like to, and don't want others judging them.
Yeah, that's a great advantage of the technology that we've embraced over these last 2.5-3 years. Yeah, great point. Thanks for calling that out. Coming at this from maybe just looking for some of your advice as an expert in your field, you've talked about sleep and stress and other things, both personally and with people you've worked with. I'm curious, what do you think, from what you've seen, is just like the number one thing people could embrace about their situation that would lead to a healthier environment for themselves?
Well, you know, people ask me, what's the number one thing I can do to get healthy? I always say eat, limit, or eliminate processed foods. That's part of the reason that, you know, 70% of people are overweight now. And the trajectory, if we keep on the same trajectory by 2030, they're expecting 50% to be obese. And all these processed foods have a lot to do with it. It's not that you're a bad person or you're a weak person or you don't have any willpower. It's all these foods that they pump sugar into. They pump all this high fructose corn syrup to make it taste better and have a longer shelf life. And you know, saturated fats and everything. All these are really, and we don't even have the ingredients. If you look at them, you can't even pronounce them.
You can't pronounce them, no.
You know, so that's a real processed food. So I tell people just to you know, you can call it eating clean or eating whole foods or whatever, but just stay away from heavily processed foods and limit processed foods. If, you know, there's some foods are heavily processed, some are lightly processed. Cereal might be something that's lightly processed.
Okay.
Some of these protein bars that we think are so healthy, they're overly processed. If you can't pronounce all the ingredients, it's overly processed. Just eliminating or limiting those can make a huge difference.
Thanks for the advice there. I am curious as well, when you've worked with people, and again, I know you don't work with individuals in that coaching dynamic per se, but I am curious, you know, maybe around the topic of goal setting, when we say, hey, reduce or remove overly processed foods is the great first step in improving your wellness. Do you have any advice on setting yourself up to succeed incrementally in that goal so that you, as you said earlier, you can start to build momentum? The way we talk about that, it's almost just like stop doing that and then your life will be that way forever. But we both know we struggle with going back and forth around achieving and being successful with goals. Any advice, any wisdom around that topic of approaching that behavioral change?
Sure. Well, first of all, you know, you want to look in your cupboards, look in your refrigerator. Yep. And get, I mean, you know, some people still have trouble throwing food away. If you can't throw it away, then give it away. You know, just get it out of your space. And so that would be the first thing, just get rid of it. If you're not much of a cook, maybe you start small, just, you know, roasted chicken breast and some vegetables and brown rice or something. But if you want to start researching recipes, then you get a grocery list and you go and buy what you want to prepare. And you, because what happened, and then you meal prep. You know, most mm-hmm. people make bad choices because they're tired, they're in a hurry, and it's easy to grab and go. But if you meal prep, I always tell my students the night before, you know, meal prepping for a whole week can be a bit overwhelming. It can I don't do it. Now, some people, that's fine. They can do that. But the majority of people I have found, that's too much. So just do it one day at a time. So the night before, okay, what am I going to eat the next day? And you look in your fridge, because if you say you're going to eat salmon and you don't have any salmon, well, that's not going to happen. Yeah. So you plan your three meals for what you have. And then if you need to cut up some onions or do a little prep beforehand, you do that night or first thing in the morning. But most of the time, it's easier to do it at night. After you've cleaned up the kitchen, just get everything ready. And then tomorrow, you just eat the things that you wrote on your list that you're going to eat. And that also helps with decision fatigue, which is another issue we can talk about on another podcast. But fatigue is, you know, you don't have to make a decision. It's already been made for you. All you have to do is follow the plan. I said I was going to have yogurt and berries with nuts on it for breakfast. And for lunch, I'm going to have a turkey sandwich with lettuce, tomato, and onion with a little bit of mayonnaise. And then for dinner, I'm going to have grilled chicken and vegetables and brown rice. So, you know, whatever you put, you've already thought about it. You've prepared for it. You know you have it. And then you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa. There's a lot of great stuff in that last section. Thank you for all those. Anything from getting rid of the food that you know you're not supposed to be tempted with having in front of you to the planning to reducing decision fatigue all sound like great small steps that could help somebody build some momentum in the right direction. So thank you for calling all those out. Before we start to wind things down here, I actually found when we talked the first time about a month ago and you were just getting off an airplane, I believe in Charleston or somewhere like that. I had written down a note and I wanted to make sure to ask you about this. It hasn't come up naturally in the conversation, but something that stood out to me was you said so many of the things people face are within our control. And it strikes me from looking at your company's website that there is an element to this kind of empowerment. You know, you empower yourself, you have control over a certain amount of things in your life that maybe we don't always even realize. And I just wanted to open up the opportunity to see if there's anything you wanted to say about that, because that's what I remembered talking to you the first time on the phone a month ago.
Well, it's funny. I wrote a blog that went out today to my database on that very thing. You know, a lot of times, especially when you, if you're thinking about chronic diseases like dementia, Alzheimer, cancer, type 2. Well, my mother and father had it. You know, my mother-in-law had Alzheimer's. And so my husband, he worries about it. But I keep telling him our genes are not our destiny. The okay. new research out there with epigenetics is saying it over and over again. Genes, depending on which research you're looking at, can be as little as 5% or as much as 20%. But the bottom line is lifestyle changes are what really dictates our longevity, our mobility, all the things that you want as you get older. So our genes are not our destiny. Lifestyle change, changing our habits, that is very much in our control, but we have to want to do it, and then we need to know how to do it.
Well said. Thanks for jumping in on that. I appreciate that, Lisa. Before we finish it up, I ask every guest the same question at the end. You can answer it however you like. The question is, what is something that you've learned recently?
That I tend, you know, my voice carries, and then I get passionate about something and it goes up like another decibel. And so I've had to be very intentional about not getting so intense and loud with whatever I'm saying. And maybe on this podcast, when you edit it, you'll see that. But I have to, you know, take it down a notch, and I can still get the same point across. It's just, you know, my delivery, I just get so excited about it. And,
yeah.
you know, I've got a little Southern European heritage, so I'm emotional. I use my hands and, you know, I just can't not do that. But I'm working on it. So that's something that I've noticed and I'm learning about myself that I want to work on.
Well, cool. Thanks for sharing that, Lisa. I appreciate it. So you've helped us navigate the topic of wellness today. Very important topic. This is the final episode for me in my first season in this podcast, and I'm glad that it made the list. It's striking me as it could be an inspiration for a variety of other topics moving into future seasons. But thank you for taking the time. For those of you, for those listening who are interested in learning more about you, your services, Wellness 5 as an organization, where would you like to direct them?
If you work for a company, you know, let your company know to check out my website, wellness5.com. The senior leadership, they can make an appointment with me. I really don't do individual coaching unless I'm in a corporate setting, organizational setting. I will do some of individual coaching to complement the group coaching. My website's a great place to check out what I do, how we help people. And then I also have an e-health tip a couple times a month on how to improve your health. And you could email hello@wellness5.com to get on. My assistant will get you on that list. And that is something you can do as an individual. You don't have to work for a company or whatever, if you just want to get that.
Excellent. So wellness5.com and hello@wellness5.com to get on that that newsletter. Well, thanks. It's been my pleasure. Lisa, thanks for coming on this afternoon, and have a great rest of your Thursday. It's nice to talk to you.
You too. Thanks, Jason. Have a good day.